Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
I got my man, the Big O, Orlando Franklin, staying in for Mark off today, doing Mark Schlereth type stuff. He'll be back tomorrow. So I've had a chance to bounce this question off of Mark, off of Nick Ferguson, who sat in over the last couple of weeks. So I want to get your thoughts. After a busy offseason, everything that went on with the draft, free agency, the OTAs, the mini camps, boil it all down for me. What are we left with?
9-7.
Okay. All right, why?
Because the offensive line still needs some more help. The inside linebacker position is going to hurt you at some point during this year when it comes to these tight ends making huge plays down the field or these running backs coming out the backfield. But 9-7 is improvement. They're playing better defense. They're able to win a lot more games on the road than we saw over the last couple years. And you're able to win those early morning games, right, on the road that the Broncos have struggled with over the last couple years.
So they'll go from 6 wins to 9 because of superior coaching, because the talent has been upgraded over the last couple of years. What?
Combination of both. Talent's been upgraded at quarterback position. You need a guy that's going to compete on third down. We haven't seen that with Case Keenum last year. Too often, 3rd and 7, the ball's being thrown short at the sticks. No, Joe Flacco's going to come here. He's going to compete. He's going to throw the ball to a receiver where if he gets tackled at that spot on third down, the first down's being made. Just catch the ball. So you're going to compete a little bit better. Rick Scangarello's going to come in. You're going to have a lot more window dressing and on offense. So you're going to have teams guessing a little bit more where the Broncos became so predictable last year within their play calling under Musgrave. And the defense is, I don't see no more 200-yard rushers, that's for sure, in a week. So I think the defense gets a lot better. And when you're able to play with a lead, you're going to get the production out of Von Miller, Bradley Chubb, and Chris Harris Jr., Kareem Jackson. You're going to get all that production. And I love the fact that Justin Simmons and Will Parks, they're going into their final year of their contract. And, you know, with the Broncos only doing a one-year deal for Chris Harris Jr. to get him back in here, well, is the future Will Parks and Justin Simmons? Is that combination the future? They're the guys that you drafted. Are you looking to extend those guys? So I think they got a lot to prove on both sides of the ball. And they're going to be a better football team because of the coaching staff that they brought in, but also the free agents.
All right, so you're willing to go to 9. 10 is, and we talked about this last week, 10, it's hard to win 10 games in the NFL.
Yeah, yes, it is.
Okay, I'm glad you had that kind of reaction, because I think some people are like, oh, 10 wins is, you know, well, 10 wins is hard.
Yeah.
So the fact that you're at 9, but you don't want to make that leap to 10. Is it all because of the offensive line? Is that, that's the major sticking point for you?
The offensive line and the inside linebacker's position.
Okay.
Your inside linebacker is your sideline to sideline guy. He's there first down, second down, third down. You know, he's the one that's calling the defense, wearing the green dot on all the packages, you know, dime, nickel, sub, base. And he's got to be able to also tell this whole defensive line what to do, because the strength of the formation dictates how the defense is lining up now. And right now, I just don't see the person that could do it. I mean, maybe Josie Jewell could do it, but second year, highly unlikely. He didn't play a ton of snaps last year. It wasn't like he was a full-time starter. Todd Davis, he's your hammer. He's your first and second down player. So right now, I'm looking at, well, is this Justin Holland's kid going to be the guy? But is he going to learn this defense fast enough? Is he going to really know everything about this defense in order to do that? If Derek Wolfe is in a 3 technique, but it's strong right, where there's two wide receivers to the right side of the formation, now is Justin Hollins going to be able to tell Derek Wolfe, hey, you got to bump out of the B gap and move from a 3 technique to the A gap? I don't think he's going to be able to do that as a rookie. Dakota Watson, okay, the Broncos traded for Dakota Watson. He was already here. If he was that type of player and they saw that in him, the Broncos were very thin at that inside linebacker, that third down linebacker. They only had Brandon Marshall. You would have kept Dakota Watson. So right now, I don't see a person on the roster that's going to be able to do that. And I think that it's going to start with Josie Jewell, and they're going to try to figure it out from there, and they're hoping for a Vic Fangio bump. But Josie Jewell is not this burner. He's a very instinctful football player. He is sideline to sideline. But as far as his speed, he didn't get drafted because of his speed and athleticism, where you got to play Travis Kelce twice this year. You got to play Hunter Henry twice this year. And those guys got some speed and athleticism. You got to play Kyle Rudolph. You got to play a lot of these tight ends. So I think they're going to try Josie Jewell out there, and they're hoping for the Fangio bump. But I don't know how much of a Fangio bump you're going to get when you're playing against these all-pro tight ends in this division, or these Pro Bowl tight ends that you're going to have to face this year.
All right, 9-7. There's some more aspects of that I want to revisit here as we move along. I'm surprised you're not wearing your Raptors jersey today. I mean, a proud Toronto.
I wear the Toronto tattoo every day.
You
do. Yeah,
that's right. You got the Toronto tattoo. So Toronto's your city. So I got to ask, a guy who grew up in Toronto, how do you feel about the NBA championship being north of the border? And my specific question is this. Because I'm trying to kind of sift through all the fallout here of this Anthony Davis trade to the Lakers and everything that's gone on with Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson and what it all means for the Nuggets. Does Kawhi Leonard, does winning a championship make him want to stay in Toronto? Or since he got the championship, it makes it even easier for him to leave Toronto?
The Canadian
and go with probably somebody in the Western Conference.
The Canadian in me makes me want to think that he would stay in Canada, but the athlete in me says that, hey, he could leave. He could really leave. He came there. He was there for 6-7 months or however long it was, made DeMar DeRozan's whole legacy with the Raptors, his 7-8-9-year legacy or whatever it was, irrelevant in 7 months, became a finals MVP, brought a finals to the city. I could see him saying that, you know what, I've accomplished enough here. I brought something to the city that you guys have never had. And now going back closer to home, a team like the LA Lakers that just got AD and they already got LeBron and they're already favored to win the finals by Vegas.
I'm thinking more Clippers.
I'm going to the Lakers. I'm going to go play with LeBron. I'm going to go play with AD and have an immediate opportunity now to get back into the finals and become another finals MVP. Now you gotta battle against LeBron and see how that pans out. But I think it made it a lot easier for him to walk away, being that he won the finals and he got the finals MVP in Toronto last week.
By the way, the Nuggets, I think this is a golden opportunity for them to do something really bold. I'm fascinated to watch to see what the Golden State Warriors do with both Durant and Klay Thompson. The numbers are staggering. To sign them both, with Durant not playing next year and Klay not being back until like February,
Yeah. You
would be adding $168 million in payroll and adding another $155 million in a luxury tax.
Just to have one guy there for half a season.
Right, for one guy.
Yeah.
But with the idea that we'd get them both back afterwards to win championships.
That's what you're adding for next year, but you're only going to have one guy for half the year.
I hope the Nuggets are just going to sit, are ready to pounce. Meaning if Golden State tries to play it cute and say, look, hey, Klay Thompson, listen, just do a one-year deal with us and then, you know, come back, get the 1 year, and then you'll be free agent again, and then we'll give you the max deal. If they do, and I don't think they will, but if they try to play a cute boy, I hope the Nuggets swoop in and say, hey, Klay, we'll give you a max deal.
No.
Even though we know you're not going to be ready until February, that's okay. Take your time. We're a good enough team to be able to go out and get ourselves in a nice position for the playoffs, and then you come back and join us for the playoff run, and then we've got you and your talents and everything else for 4 more years after that.
If I'm the Nuggets GM, I'm in constant contact with Klay Thomas's agent.
I hope.
And I got to see exactly what the Warriors are offering. And I need to know. I need daily updates.
Yeah.
Hey, what did you guys talk about today?
Yeah. I don't think it's going to happen, but if that's what Golden State thinks about doing, Boy, I hope the Nuggets are ready to pounce and take advantage because they're in a great position to do just that. All right, coming up next, Pro Football Focus sharing some very interesting data on what is most important in today's NBA, today's NFL. As NFL fans, you'll find this very interesting. We'll share it with you next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to eFirstBank.com/business for more details.
Well, like it or not, analytics is all over the place when it comes to all sports. And
Nerd alert.
Made its way to the NFL as well, as analytics are becoming more and more how it's impacting the way the game is played. Orlando Franklin in for Stank. And so I was checking this out. Peter King's Football Morning in America column. He's taking some vacation time, so other guest columnists have been filling in for him while he's been taking some time off. So they had a lot of the folks from Pro Football Focus weigh in. And they have come up with some findings based on all the stats, the data, about what the most important things are in football right now. Let me run a couple things off you, Orlando, and let me get your thoughts as a player. Here's their first one. To predict quarterback play, look at how he performs when he's in a clean pocket, not when he's under pressure. Okay, right away, you're laughing. Why?
Because this game, quarterback cannot control that. He relies on the five guys up front and, in some cases, the running backs and the tight ends to control the pocket and to create a clean pocket. But every pocket is not going to be a clean pocket in NFL.
Right.
So you play this game under pressure. That's just how you play it.
Now, the numbers say that they don't play under pressure. The numbers say that 70% of the time a quarterback is executing from a clean pocket.
Well, that's on the offensive coordinator. And, you know, designing plays where you're getting the ball out of your hands right now. As an offensive lineman, you want to be able to block for 2.5 to 3 seconds. But there's some plays where you know that ball is coming out right now. And when teams are blitzing, you're trying to take advantage of the blitz. And that ball needs to come out right away versus a blitz. But teams, defensively, they call plays in order to create pressure. So the quarterback's not going to always be able to just sit back there and pick the defense apart. Back in the day now, if you would have said that, I would agree. Because back in the day, we only saw teams have one defensive stud, like a Lawrence Taylor or a Reggie White with Green Bay. They only had the one defensive stud. But now you're seeing teams where they got the two edge rushers. And then all of a sudden you're seeing teams saying, okay, it's not enough to have two edge rushers. I think Denver was one of the first to do it when you got the Von Miller and the Elvis Dumervil link up in 2011. Now you got two premier pass rushers on the outside. But now you're seeing teams getting the production that these outside rushers have been doing in the last years. At the defensive tackle position. Now you're seeing the Aaron Donalds, the Chris Jones, the Geno Atkins.
Right.
So you're not going to have a clean pocket.
Well, okay. According to the nerds, the eggheads at Pro Football Focus, these quarterbacks do have a clean pocket. And since,
well, you're throwing, since, they're getting since, the ball out of their hands quick,
since the
right?
pressure, but since the pressure the quarterbacks face is sort of, you know, everybody has to kind of deal with it. How you truly measure quarterbacks is then what do they do when the pocket is clean? Like I'm encouraged to hear because I always sort of chafed at the idea that, well, you know, this quarterback, you want a quarterback that can make something out of nothing. You know, I hate it. You know, is a threat when the play breaks down. I don't want a quarterback who's a threat when the play breaks down. I want a quarterback who is just an assassin out there who will gladly you know, take a self sack or just throw the ball down in disgust at the line of scrimmage, knowing that he's going to come back the next play and be able to get a matchup that he can really exploit for a big play. That's what I want from my quarterback. I don't care about making something out of nothing. I care about this guy who's going to be able to have a clean pocket 70% of the time. And what does he do with it? And does he make teams pay? I don't care about the other 30%.
I think it's more the fact of getting the ball out of your hands quick. When I played here with Peyton Manning, I played, the backup was Brock Osweiler. And when Peyton was in, obviously we were firing on all our cylinders. And he was getting rid of the ball. When Brock would come in now, immediately, I remember Manny Ramirez or me or another guy saying, hey, okay, like you're in now, you got to get rid of the ball, okay? Let's not sit back there and just hang out. And his progressions and his reads would take a lot longer than Peyton Manning would. So now it didn't look like there was a clean pocket. But the only person that changed in this whole situation was the quarterback. It was the same offensive line that was out there. We were blocking it the exact same way. We were picking up the blitz the exact same way as if Peyton was in there. But Brock's progression was a lot slower. So now it looked like there wasn't a clean pocket.
Ah.
So I think it has a lot to do or more to do with the design of the play, but also the mental aspect of the quarterback. And can he really diagnose the defense and know where he needs to go with the ball right now? Because if you know where you need to go with the ball right now and you're able to, dissect blitzes and dissect coverages before the snap, and like a Peyton Manning and like a Phillip Rivers, you're going to get the ball out of your hand and it's going to look like a clean pocket every play.
Well, maybe Brock should have been spending more time on that instead of, you know, worrying about this.
Ball security is job security.
There you go. Another finding from Pro Football Focus, coverage is more important than pass rush. Coverage is more important than pass rush. So the idea was always, hey, in order to make your secondary look good, you got to put a lot of pressure on the quarterback. Now, and I've always thought, my theory's always been that the 2015 Broncos kind of flipped the switch on how this was always thought of, where the no-fly zone was so good in their coverage that they made everything up front look better. Is that what we're saying? Are we seeing more of a shift towards that?
Back in the day, I thought a good pass rush complemented average back end. But the last couple years with the Broncos, I saw a good pass rush last year with Bradley Chubb and Von Miller. You know, they led the league in sacks as far as a duo combined. But last year it was, where's Chris Harris Jr.? Okay, we're going to throw out the other cornerback. So I could agree with that statement as far as coverage being more important than a pass rush, because I saw it too often. Bradley LaRobe getting burnt in the passing game. Pac-Man Jones getting burnt in the passing game. Isaac Yadam getting burnt in the pass rush game. But then you also still have the two guys that lead the league as combined sacks. So I can 100% agree with that, that coverage is more important than a good pass rush, because the offensive line also is going to change up their sets and how they're blocking things. And they're going to be cut blocking these defensive linemen. They're going to be jump setting these guys, or they're going to go max protection and keep a tight end in and keep a running back in. So the back end needs to be able to hold up. So I agree with coverage being more important than just having a good pass rush.
All right, Four Down Territory is coming up next. Don't forget, we're going to have Troy Rank, our Denver 7 insider, join us coming up in about 20 minutes. I want to ask him, after the Rockies and Padres set a modern era record by combining for 92 runs in a four-game series, is that a bad look at all for the Rockies? We'll get to that with Troy coming up in about 20 minutes. Four Down Territory coming up next. What Peyton Manning had to say about the passing of Mr. B. That's next.
Professional football in America is a special game.
This is Four Down Territory.
I'd like to start out with a thank you to John Elway.
That just happened.
All right, now, I'll kill a snitch. I'm not saying I have. I'm not saying I have.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountain?
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
Gentlemen, this is the real thing. This is what you've been trained for.
First down.
Peyton Manning from the gun with pressure coming. Floats it for Demaryius Thomas at the 5 with the over-the-shoulder catch. He's into the end zone for the touchdown. Sean Smith beaten by Demaryius Thomas and a 6-0 lead for the Denver Broncos.
Westwood won there with that glorious highlight. Peyton Manning taking time
from his weekend as he was honored at the University of Tennessee in their Sports Hall of Fame to share his thoughts on the passing of Pat Bowlen, and shared how much what you and other players have said about how Mr. B was a guy that was much more than an owner, was dedicated to making your jobs easier in the interest of trying to win, but he also showed a willingness to get to know you guys as yeah. as men and what you had going on in your life. And Peyton shared some stories about what it was like for him dealing with Mr. B that way.
Yeah, he's awesome owner. I mean, literally, like I told you earlier in the show, when I got here in 2011, I had no idea that Mr. Bowlen had connections to Canada. I didn't know he was Canadian. I literally had no idea. But that was something that he brought up in a conversation. And I'm this 22-year-old kid where I'm talking to the owner of this team, and I'm thinking he doesn't even really know my name. More or less, he knows that I'm from Canada, and he's bringing up that connection. So that was always a great thing about him, that you, whenever he was in the building, yeah, you were able to talk to him. You didn't have to just see him and walk right past him. No, you could say hi to him and stop by and just have a little chit-chat with him, and he would respond back to you.
This is an element of his passing, and also with the Hall of Fame coming up, that is going to get, I think, very clumsy, very controversial. It just got handed to me by DeHuff. So did you know that the Hall of Fame has a policy in place, Orlando, that they do not present a gold jacket, the distinctive gold jacket that is given to Hall of Famers?
Yep.
They do not give a gold jacket and a Hall of Fame ring to the family of the Hall of Famer who is no longer with us. They did not do it with Junior Seau. They did not do it with Ken Stabler. No. And as it stands right now, the policy is there will not be a gold jacket nor Hall of Fame ring given to the Bowlen family.
Yeah, that has to change.
How stupid is that?
That has to change. I mean, the difference is Pat Bowlen has done so much for this league with the TV deals and getting different things done. So I think that has to change this year. And the Hall of Fame, they got to get it right. They got to give it to Pat Bowlen's family, but they also got to go back and give it to Ken Stabler and Junior Seau's family as well.
Next in four down territory.
Second down.
Kizer back to throw, pumps. In trouble. Wrapped up.
Oh, he took
the ball away. It is Khalil Mack with the sack and the strip. And welcome to Chicago, big boy.
All right, Bears radio. So how about this for a tough talking in the summer? Bears safety Eddie Jackson says about the Bears, quote, "Right now we just want to build off everything and let that be the fuel to our fire. We plan on taking this whole thing." Woo! Laying it down in June when nobody will remember this in September.
Yep.
What about the Bears? When we talk about the NFL, NFC hierarchy, where do you want to put the Bears, who no longer have Fangio magic?
Yeah, it all depends on who takes over as calling the defensive play calls. You just lost a great defensive coordinator in Vic Fangio. You lost a great secondary coach in Ed Donatell. Fortunately, we have him here with the Broncos. But who's going to call that defense now? Who's going to get that back end right with the secondary? So I think that's going to be the big key, because when I look at the Chicago Bears, yeah, they're stacked. I like their offensive line play. I like their running backs, the receivers. I like everything that they're doing on offense. They use Trubisky the right way. I'm not a big Trubisky fan either, but they are using him the right way. They're not trying to say, hey, we need you to come back here and drop back 50 times a game and just throw the ball out of a pocket. No, they do a lot of different innovative things where now it's able to give him a lot of more open looks and open reads for him to throw the ball down the field. They got a great front seven, but it's going to all come down to who's calling this defense. Is this defense going to be aggressive like they were last year? And also, who's coaching up that secondary, because you just lost a couple guys out of that room.
All right, I'm going to play the game here. Quick word association. You don't get much time to think about it. Team to beat in the NFC this year is
Chicago Bears.
Oh! Okay. All right. I'll still go with the Rams, thank you. Next in four down territory.
Third down.
You gotta pay him this month. Jack's agents are not going to let you come in under Carson Wentz.
Ooh. Michael Irvin, the playmaker, saying that Dak Prescott must get paid and must get paid every bit or more than what Carson Wentz is getting, which is right now for Wentz about $32 million per season.
Yeah.
All right? Is that where Dak Prescott belongs? Carson Wentz money?
I look at the year that the Eagles won the Super Bowl, that Carson Wentz gets hurt, and he had a tremendous year until he tore his ACL. And ultimately, Nick Foles goes in there and has that next man up mentality and gets it done and wins a Super Bowl. So, although Nick Foles was the Super Bowl MVP and Carson Wentz wasn't because he didn't play in that game, Carson Wentz still has the hardware. So I don't think that Dak Prescott should now get the same amount of money. I think that you got to look at it as the same ways that they view rookies in this league. When in certain situations with veterans, when rookies come in now, ever since we had the lockout in 2011, everything is just slanted on a pay scale. Okay, first round you get 20. First round, first overall, you might get $25 million. The second overall might get $23.5 million. Third overall, you might be at $22 million. So with that being said, okay, Carson Wentz has a Super Bowl ring. So Dak Prescott, you do not have a Super Bowl ring. So now we're thinking maybe $30 million. Maybe we're thinking $29 a year. He deserves a payday, absolutely. Yeah. But I just don't see why he should get more than the next person because it's like every quarterback that's up in a deal, he becomes now the highest paid quarterback until 6 months later when there's a next quarterback deal that's going up and now he becomes the highest.
I like Dak Prescott. He's a good, solid quarterback. But in a league in which 4,000 yards passing is the new sort of norm for where you should be, he has yet to have a 4,000 yard passing season in his 3 years despite playing 16 games every single season. And he averages 22 touchdown passes per year. Again, look, solid numbers. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, to be up north of $30 million per year, I don't see Jared overpaying for Dak Prescott. Pay him, but not like that. You're right.
Yeah.
Next in four down territory.
Fourth down.
Most excited about Kyler is his leadership. He looks like he's already ready to go. He's a prime time ready to go, and he's already conducting, leading the offense, and, you know, he's moving around, scrambling, and, you know, it's making it tough for the defense to definitely catch him, and his arm is very good, very accurate, and he can throw the deep ball pretty well.
Wow. David Johnson, who's been around the league for a while,
yep,
just positively gushing about Kyler Murray.
That's your quarterback. It's a guy that you just took with the number one overall
pick. Does he really believe all that stuff, or is he saying it because he has to say it?
I think he's saying it because he has to say it. He threw in that he's making it tough for the defense to catch him. Well, this is OTAs. This is, even in training camp, the defense can't hit the quarterback. What happens when Kyler Murray goes out there on a Sunday and he gets that welcome to the NFL moment that we saw Philip Lindsay got last year with Kareem Jackson when he played against the Texans? Is Kyler Murray going to jump up and be good to go? I mean, these defensive linemen, they're bigger, they're more stronger. And Kyler Murray, yeah, you're going to have to do some things with your legs, especially with that offensive line that they had out there with Arizona the last couple years. But as far as David Johnson just literally praising him right now, it's your quarterback. It's the guy that you just traded away a first-round pick quarterback the year before. So you got to get behind him. You got to say, hey, the organization was right with the move that they made, and you got to just go out there and hope for the best once the season starts.
Look, here's all the proof you need that David Johnson said it because he had to say it. He also said that he believes Josh Rosen will go on and have a great career in the NFL as well.
Yeah.
So
the
Cardinals got it right with both quarterbacks.
Yeah.
They're both going to be great, according to David Johnson. All right, that'll do it for Four Down Territory, our tour around the NFL. Bring that to you each and every morning at 7:30. Troy Rank, our Denver 7 insider, what does he make of this NFL gold jacket, Hall of Fame ring policy, and all that offense this weekend between the Rockies and Padres? Is that necessarily a good thing? That's next.
You're listening to Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
All right, let's chop it up with our Denver 7 sports insider. Troy Ranke joins us now. Troy, good morning. And let's start with this policy that the Pro Football Hall of Fame has, where they do not present one of those iconic gold jackets nor a Hall of Fame ring to the family of somebody going in who has passed away. That's got to change between now and the Hall of Fame induction ceremonies, no?
Well, you'd hope so. I mean, this would be a different situation. Someone who passed between when they were elected and the ceremony. This has never happened. So if there was ever a time to make an exception, this would be it. I mean, I thought it was a ridiculous policy when it was with Junior Seau and Kenny Stabler. I think it's even more ridiculous now if they were not to present him, Pat Bowlen, the ring and the jacket, because, again, he was elected and has passed between his election and induction. This has never happened. So there's an opportunity here for the Hall, in my opinion, to do the right thing and either create an exception to the rule or rewrite the policy. I mean, it's irritating because he should have been in years ago. I mean, the idea that this is an issue now is just, it's unfortunate, and it's bothersome to me because he should have never had to wait this long, meaning Pat Bowlen. So that's something the Hall of Fame will look at. Whether they will change the policy, we don't know. But again, there's a clear path here to say this has never happened. Let someone pass between their induction and their ceremony, and it's a chance for the Hall to do the right thing.
Who's responsible for this decision? Is it strictly on the Hall of Fame? Is it something where Roger Goodell could step in and veto what they're saying and push for this? Who's exactly responsible for this?
Yeah, I would have to come from the Hall of Fame. I mean, the NFL obviously has a relationship with the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but the NFL does not run the Pro Football Hall of Fame or legislate it. I mean, it's similar. I vote in terms of the Baseball Hall of Fame, and it's the same situation where, you know, the Hall, in terms of baseball, it's its own separate entity. MLB has no governance over it, and the Baseball Hall gave their policies over to the writers, Baseball Writers of America, years ago. I mean, you know, approaching 100 years here now, and that's where that's how they handled it. In this situation, the Hall could change it. It wouldn't be from the NFL, though. I mean, the NFL certainly could put pressure on them internally, you know, and say, hey, we got to do right by this, and this seems like an obvious situation to make an exception to a rule. But yeah, the NFL in itself does not legislate the Hall of Fame, even though it kind of feels like they do, but they don't, because it's the Pro Football Hall of Fame, not the NFL Hall of Fame.
Troy Rank, our guest. Troy, there's growing momentum, growing sentiment that the Broncos Stadium should be named after Pat Bowlen. Do you think he would want that, knowing that you're talking about somebody who is at the forefront among the ownership group of really advancing the NFL into the money-making machine that it is today?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to try to speak for him, you know, after his passing, but the Pat Bowlen I knew would not want the stadium named after him. Now, could there be a way to do it where the field's named after him, so you have the sponsorship, and then it's at Pat Bowlen Field? But Pat Bowlen was about, the reason they have a new stadium was to help generate money for the Broncos to win football games. Pat Bowlen, you know, expanded the brand internationally. Pat Bowlen is responsible for Sunday Night Football as much as anyone in league history. I mean, he was a businessman and had a vision for how teams could run and the league could run going forward. And if you name the stadium after him, that's, let's say, I mean, this is a hypothetical figure, that's $25 million a year in revenue you've lost. That he would, knowing the Pat Bowlen I knew and covered back in the 90s, that wouldn't be his preference, would be, wait, they can name the field after me and we lose income that I can put back into the team, which he did regularly. As Mike Shanahan told me a couple days ago, Pat Bowlen wasn't the richest owner, but he felt he wanted to win more than anybody. And he used the money he received and put it back into the team. So while I totally understand what fans are, you know, trying to honor him that way, they have Pat Bowlen Fieldhouse at Dove Valley. The actual center over there, the main building, is named after Pat's father. I don't think he would want, knowing Pat the way I did, you know, and covered him in the 90s, that he would want the stadium named after him. Again, I think maybe the best solution, if that's what fans wanted, would be name the field after him and still have a sponsorship on the stadium.
Troy, Michael Irvin comes out and says that you got to pay Dak Prescott. You got to pay him, and you cannot give him an offer that is less than what Carson Wentz got. Do you agree with that? Is Dak Prescott the new guy that should be the highest paid person in the NFL?
I do not. I just don't think he's good enough. But I do think he is unique to the Dallas market. You need stability, and you need a quarterback that brings sanity to that position in that market. That's like playing for the Yankees, playing for the Lakers. That is a brand, national brand franchise, and you can't have a quarterback there that can't handle that. And he has proven in terms of his leadership and how he handles the responsibility of being the Cowboys quarterback, he's proven he can do that. And that is not something you can just dismiss easily. The problem for me is he's not even, what is he, the 15th best quarterback? You can't make him the highest paid in that regard. He's just not good enough to be that. Now, because Wentz is more talented. Now, there's questions about Wentz's health. But I don't think anyone would argue that when healthy, Wentz is better than Dak Prescott. I mean, that's been proven. You know, so I would disagree with Urban. I respect his opinion backing Prescott as a former Cowboy and a guy I'm sure who likes Dak Prescott on a personal level. But there's no way he should be the highest paid quarterback. That makes no sense to me.
Troy, all that offense this weekend between the Rockies and Padres set a modern era record by combining for 92 runs in a four-game series. A lot of entertainment, but in the long run, is that a bad thing? Is that a bad look for the Rockies?
Well, you can't win that way consistently. I mean, they need to check where that water main broke. Was that hooked up to the humidor? I mean, there's been series like that through the years since the advent of the humidor in 2001, where you're like, wait, this doesn't feel like, why is it playing this way? Sometimes it's the weather. It gets hot when it's been cold. Sometimes it's bad pitching. I do think the baseball this year is different. They have years where they use a rabbit ball, and then they deny it MLB, but the ball does seem bouncier this year when you look at the home run numbers and the guys who are hitting home runs. But it's not good for the Rockies in terms of trying to win a title. I mean, the NL West is almost out of reach at this point. But I'm talking in terms of winning and going deep into the playoffs. And the Red Sox, you grew up with this, when they tried to build their team around Fenway Park all those years. And it wasn't until they had Pedro Martinez and Curt Schilling they broke through. It's very difficult to win a title in Major League Baseball if you're like, we're going to slug our way through it. Because eventually, good pitching defeats good hitting. And that's especially in the playoffs where you no longer face fourth, fifth starters. In some cases, you don't even face the number three. So it's fun. It's entertaining. But slow pitch softball over the course of a season wears a team down, wears a pitching staff down, and it's almost impossible to win anything significant trying to play that way.
Plus, it also just feeds the narrative that whatever these guys do, the numbers that they put up, they can't be rewarded because of the Coors Field effect. I could just see, you know, national baseball people out there just kind of, you know, rolling their eyes. Oh, look at the headline. Look at what the Rockies and Padres did. See, that's why we can't take what Nolan Arenado and Charlie Blackman and Trevor Story does seriously, because it's just all Coors Field.
Well, it hurts. There's no question. And the only way around that is just to have something resembling normal home road splits, which drives me crazy because almost all great players have a discrepancy between their home ballpark and their road ballpark. And there's some great hitters' parks, from Yankee Stadium to Philly to Cincinnati to Texas, I mean, to Baltimore. This idea that it's only Coors is silly. Coors is clearly tilted offensively. But the home runs this week notwithstanding have normalized to a degree where it shouldn't be the perception that any numbers you put up at Coors are a joke. That's not fair to the players. It's just not. When Jimmy Rollins beat Matt Holliday for MVP in 07, go back and look at Jimmy Rollins' splits and the damage he did. Look at Ryan Howard, the damage he did with those Phillies teams. I mean, so Yankees, you know, that right porch at 314, it's not just Coors, but that's the perception, unfortunately, becomes the reality when there's a series like this. And I hope it doesn't hurt Blackman because, I mean, this guy is on an historic run right now. 15 hits in a four-game series, one of the greatest four-game series of all time. I mean, he deserves respect for that. But again, if he wants national respect at the end of the season, it all comes down to those home road splits. And if you have two-thirds of your numbers at Coors Field, fair or not, that will be the perception that you're a Coors Field creation, even though in the case of Charlie, in the case of Nolan, we know it's not true. Look at DJ LeMahieu. You think he was a Coors Field creation?
Right.
He's been the Yankees' best player this year. So that's where I get a little frustrated.
All right. Great stuff as always, Troy. Thank you.
You got it, too.
Troy Rank, our Denver 7 Sports Insider, presented by Tranny Law. Have you or someone you know been charged with a DUI? Call for a free consultation at 303-333-1816 or TRANILaw.com. We'll get to question O. Question Orlando coming up here at the top of the hour. If you have a specific question for Orlando, hit us up on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. I'll throw one out to you, Orlando. What does the Anthony Davis trade to the Lakers mean for the Nuggets when it comes to Western Conference supremacy?
Means you guys added another team. You already had Golden State. You knew that it was going to be a battle playing against the Rockets. Well, now the Lakers are contenders. They're immediate contenders. And it's bad news in the sense for the Joker that has struggled against, you know, dominant big men in this league. So the Joker needs to get better. He needs to, I don't even know how you get better because he's so good, but he has to find a way to be effective against these dominant big men, especially when you're going to play the Lakers at least four times this year.
Okay, but here's the thing, though, and everyone's crowning the Lakers. Here's the thing, though. Do you realize that since 1984, there's only been one team that has missed the playoffs the previous year and won the NBA championship the next year? That was the 2008 Celtics, who added Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen to Paul Pierce, and they went and won a championship that year. You got LeBron. You got Anthony Davis, who's never done anything in the playoffs. LeBron's getting up there now, another year of tread off those tires. Plus, who's going to, you know, Kyle Kuzma? Is that the, you know, the undisputed third, you know, of your big three? I get why this is a deal that makes headlines, but I got to see how this whole Laker team gets put together before I go and crown them.
Oh, I'm not crowning the Lakers at all.
Okay.
I still think Golden State should be the favorite to win, even with
really?
Even with KD and not having KD all this year coming up and only going to have Klay Thompson for half the year. I still think Golden State's going to find a way to get it done. What we're going to see is more of Steph Curry and taking over, and you're going to see Iguodala now playing a lot more and Draymond Green being more involved earlier in games. That's what you're going to see. They're going to find a way to get there. They got a great coaching staff out there. But as far as the Nuggets, you just talked about the Lakers and who's their undisputed big three. Well, who's the big three with the Nuggets?
Fair point.
So I saw games where I saw Paul Millsap be brilliant, and then I saw games where he was ineffective. And is it really worth paying him the price tag that you're going to have to pay him this year? For maybe, you know, him to show up one week but not show up the next week, you got to go get players that are going to be able to be there day in and day out, because that's the only way that you're going to win a championship. What we saw with the Toronto Raptors and the Golden State Warriors in the finals, Toronto Raptors, their bench was deeper. They were more healthier. That's why they were able to win the finals. With the Nuggets, it's kind of you have the starting five, and then who else? That's it.
It's a reminder that teams like the Nuggets in markets like Denver, NBA markets like Denver, they have to do it. They have to work twice as hard as the big markets. Because the big markets have the wherewithal to just, you know, snap their fingers and instantly change their fortunes overnight. Whereas a team like the Nuggets, you know, it is a process. It is drafting. It's developing. It's bringing in guys. It's not just simply being able to cut a check and bring these guys in there. So my concern is that there's a saying in sports: if you're not getting better, you're staying. No, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse.
Yes.
And this is what I'm most interested in when it comes to the Nuggets. Do they fall into what I think would be a trap to think, hey, everything's in place. You know, Michael Porter Jr. is going to be the next big thing. And all these guys learn from this experience this past year. And they're just going to be a year older, a year wiser, a year more experienced, a year better. And that's going to be enough. Or do they have to realize that we have to be out and go out and be aggressive and add to what we already have? You know, that's the question, because teams, especially in the West, there's always going to be those teams in the West that can just instantly improve.